Hello, everyone, listeners and viewers. This is Ron Stefanski with yet another episode of Disrupt Ed, where we talk to the interesting folks out there who are helping us to understand both the challenges and the opportunities inherent in this dynamic, ginormously disrupted world of technology, this 5G wired, workforce augmented, globally interdependent, technology interconnected. And I can't figure it out, to be honest with you. I'm an English major. What do I know about this stuff? I know enough to talk to the people who do know about it. And I unleash the powers of my geekiness because I am intrigued by how all this stuff works. And so I am a willing learner and participant in these conversations. And today we have an international man of mystery, Dave Eifert from Phoenix Contact, and he is going to be joining us to talk about that little known thing, but big impact thing called the Internet of Things. So Dave, thank you for joining us today on Disrupt Ed.
It is my great pleasure. Can you hear me this time?
I can hear you this time. Technology is actually working for us. To our listeners, we were having some tech issues, and sometimes tech can be a real issue. But when you have smart people like Dave on the phone and your tech folks behind the scenes, stuff gets worked out. And here we are. It's an amazing thing, actually, that we both sit in our living rooms here, connected through technology and able to tell others about the powerful story about what's going on around us. And Dave and I had the opportunity just the other day to meet at Integrate, the conference for Industry 4.0. And the first thing I noticed about Dave is that he's this humble, sly guy on the side. He's standing off in the corner, right? And he's not doing anything, but he's got this grin that tells you he knows stuff. He's got stuff going on. And all you have to do is kind of press him a little bit. And that's what happened. We ended up having lunch, and he was telling me about all the work he was doing. And it's pretty amazing. So, Dave, talk to us about this. You've been in the tech field your entire career. Tell us a little bit about yourself and then how you came into the world of IoT.
Excellent. Oh, all right. Well, hopefully we'll keep everybody awake through this. But, I got out of college with an engineering / management dual degree way back when. And pretty much most of my career, I've worked in kind of loosely the electrical industry. But I've always found myself gravitating away from the main bread and butter of whatever it was the companies were doing, more toward the high tech, cutting edge types of things. So at one point it was power management, meters and networking and software. And then it kind of transitioned to some other different things. And eventually I got the Phoenix Contact about 18 years ago and have done various roles there. And one was project sales engineer, where you work with consulting engineering firms to get specifications written so you can, hopefully embark on successful projects that mutually benefit the customer, the integrator, everybody in the whole value chain. And then from there, I went to automation sales and worked on things like Ethernet switches, managed Ethernet switches, routers, cybersecurity stuff. And then I managed our water wastewater business for the company for about 10 years. And then as IoT and IIoT became more prevalent and Industry 4.0 started to come into shape, I transitioned into a role in that role. So I'm the business development manager for Phoenix Contact USA for IIoT. And some people say you can't spell idiot without IIoT. I guess that's true. So maybe I'm well qualified, better than I thought. But it's been cool. I've been doing this for like 18 months to 24 months, depending on how you look at it. Kind of started unofficially before I really jumped into the role full time. And it's really dynamic, and it's changing quickly. And it's interesting, like a lot of new technological waves, it kind of came out with a lot of buzzwords and a lot of glitz and glamour.
Right. That's really what I'm fascinated by is IoT is still a very amorphous thing. So maybe you can drill down and at least give us your version of the events and what it means.
Exactly. So IoT, I think, is pretty pervasive. We all live with it every day. We've all got this in some form or fashion. Some of us have smartwatches. Some of us have apps. you know, to connect to it. So we're used to wearables that's going up to a cloud. I ride this thing called a Zwift, which is a smart trainer for my bike. It's an app that you can race against people from all over the world, or at least ride with them, whatever you want to do. And real time, you get to see your relative position on the road compared to somebody else. And if you pedal fast, you'll pass them. If they pedal faster, they'll pass you. And as you go up hills, it's a smart trainer. So even though you're in the same gear, all of a sudden, you get much, much harder to pedal the device because it's ramping it up intentionally, realizing there's a hill virtually there. So it's really cool. And then you keep track of it over time and compare yourself against other folks. So we're all experienced with IoT from, as a consumer. And it's got its pluses and its minuses. Security, privacy, things like that are huge concerns. But on the industrial side, it was also promised as a panacea. And I think a lot of people 3 or 4 or 5 years ago were kind of caught up in the, you know, the sexy new terminology, digital twins and virtualization and digitalization and all these types of things. And I think a lot of projects were undertaken at that time, kind of with an enterprise, like a transformative magic wand that's going to, all of a sudden, we're going to go from Industry 3.0 to Industry 4.0 after some perhaps consultant or some big company comes in and tells us everything we need to do. So I think people's experience has generally been that those didn't go as planned. Most of them failed. You hear different statistics as to how many of them failed, but like 70, 80%. So I think there's been a retrenchment in IoT, Industrial Internet of Things, where people are saying, let's get down board of brass tacks and think about our business needs, our business problems, our KPIs, things that we use to manage our business anyway. And let's use IoT or digitalization, whatever you want to call it, as a tool or a set of tools, a toolbox, to then fix some aspect of my process or of my business. And I always recommend people start relatively small, find a well-defined process or issue or problem and seek to solve that from a business perspective. So do I want to improve OEE? Do I want to, you know, yield, reduce downtime, whatever it is I want to do? Let me apply these tools to try to solve that. And then if I don't initially, maybe I retry, you know, quickly, iteratively, and hopefully I have some success through that. I've learned something. But if I can't, then I fail relatively fast and relatively small scale.
Dave, let me go back to something you said about, you know, IoT wasn't delivering in 70 or 80% of the time. Do you think technology was oversold to us, or do you think it was built as a solution looking for a problem to solve?
I think both. I think, you know, some of these tech companies had the germ of a great idea, and it all looked good on paper or virtually, you know, on a computer screen. And it should have worked, right, in theory. And so I think a lot of people grab that and try to scale it up to enterprise-wide, you know, solution, top-down solution. And while I think it's extremely important to get top-down support, I think you need executive buy-in at the onset. But then I say take your scope and shrink it way down to a very well-defined, smaller issue. That's an important issue. For example, in our own factory in Bad Pyrmont, Germany, we're a German-based company. We have about 1,100 people in the U.S., but globally, it's probably 25,000-30,000 folks. And headquartered in Germany. This is our 100th year anniversary for Phoenix Contact, by the way. So we're getting ready to have
congratulations, happy anniversary,
which is nice. But we build our own machines. We, you know, did that make our products. So we have some machines that are very energy intensive, and we wanted to get a tab or start getting a handle on energy usage and try to reduce it for saving money, but also for sustainability, which is this other huge mega trend that's coming in now. I mean, it's been around a long, long time. I'll get to that in a second. So we deployed some energy metering, this PLC we have called PLC Next, which is able to do a lot of cool stuff with new protocols like MQTT, OPC UA, and affects more connectivity, which is really a hallmark of what IoT should be or digitalization should be. It should be really easier to share data across an enterprise than it ever has in the past and kind of tear down some of these walls in the automation pyramid.
Right, so data sharing is really one of the biggest components of IoT. I mean, making it work, right?
Absolutely.
To be able to share the data.
And it brings with it a host of different issues like security, again, that need to be addressed. So the long and short of it is we found out that through through looking at one or two or three or machines, a certain line that was very highly energy intensive, we could understand the usage, and then we could see where there was a lot of waste, not a lot, but an appreciable amount, and then reduce that without adversely affecting production. So that was great. So that was, hey, success, all right? And then what we did is we hired a data scientist who came and looked at that same data set that we already had for energy usage. And we found what some of the folks in Germany call information in the shadows of the energy information. What they meant by that was the energy data was what they were really looking for. But there's a bunch of hidden nuggets also in there that with the right set of eyes, data scientist's eyes, they could then use that same data and draw some additional conclusions. In this case, it was about anomaly detection and the ability to predict downtime and predict breakdowns and things like that, and to create some models and then apply some machine learning to that. And eventually were able to increase production at an appreciable amount because they were able to avoid unplanned downtimes and see what root causes were for that downtime in the first place. So I think that's another cool thing about what we're finding out now with IIoT is typically there's a primary thing that you were trying to solve, but often the same data looked at a different way by different stakeholders, which again is enabled by this easy sharing, now all of a sudden gives you additional benefits, and they can all add up.
Right, to find different things. Well, I think the other thing that you point out, you know, when it comes to sustainability, is this is a really tricky construct for us to get our arms around. And so as an example, one of my previous guests, Kevin Zinger, was talking about the recent decision by the state of California to go to completely EV with their entire automotive fleet across the state by 2030. And what he did is the math, and that's physically not possible, number one, given the current states of production and what's expected over the next 10 years. But secondly, it would actually increase carbon emissions. And what he pointed out was that the reason why it, you know, moving to a completely EV system would increase emissions on that kind of trajectory is because 80% of battery production is being done right now in China with coal-fueled factories that are polluting. So your point is a really important one that we make with our audience, and that is that when you're looking at sustainability, when you're looking at these things, having cross-functional, open, shared data sources is really critical because it has unintended benefits. You know, you're finding things that you didn't even think about. You're discovering problems you didn't know you had. The converse is also true. You're finding opportunities that you didn't even consider you might be able to explore further, right? So I want to go back to your idea of scale. And what you really did was say, okay, some of this is over-delivered. So what we're going to do is pull the scale and the scope way back. Let me ask you this. It seems like in that kind of a scenario, you become king for a day, right, as a consultant, because you're now saying, wait a minute, I know what works and what doesn't work. And I mean, that was one of my intrigues in having you talk with our listening and viewing audience here on Disrupt Ed, is we really want to hear the people who really know whether or not this stuff works, whether or not we should be concerned, whether or not we should be excited. And you seem to be a really good litmus test of that.
Well, thank you. I think so, because we lived it, you know. So we talked about the buzz at the time. We saw really big companies, you know, whether it be consultants or the hyperscalers or others associated in that world, talk the big talk and a very much CEO level down implementation. And I thought it was very interesting. I was in Detroit in December for a conference and met the global manufacturing lead for AWS. So this is the biggest of the big hyperscalers. This is the one company that you would think would be prescribing like digital transformation for the entire enterprise in one fell swoop, if anybody would. And he told me the same thing that I had been saying for about a year, which is, no, get the executive buy-in, but then scale it way back and find a defined little problem and solve it. And then if you're successful, hopefully you can scale it like likewise, you know, cookie cutter, apply it to similar.
So it's really under-promise, over-deliver, build confidence in the organization, and then take it forward.
Yeah, and then realize that there will be several things that you do not really try to apply these IIoT tools towards, because it's just not really worth it. You know, let's leave that one alone. And, you know, maybe someday when the technology advances further, we can bring that one online as well. But, you know, let's do the 80-20 rule. Let's find the 20% of things that'll give us 80% of the benefit and a measurable ROI and all that kind of good stuff. And then the other thing that really comes into this that we touched on was sustainability. And that was a concept that, to my knowledge, my studies has really, well, we really started in the mid-90s, 1994. There was this gentleman from England who was a business consultant, and his name's escaping me at the moment. I apologize. We can look that up. But he came up with this concept of the triple bottom line. So for all of, you know, industrial history and developed economies, everybody's had the profit motive. So that was kind of the base measure, the bottom line, profit. So he theorize that, you know, that's great for the short term, but not really so great for the sustainable future. And therefore, we need to look at three things, a triple bottom line. So people, planet, profits. And you could call those three different things. You could call it environmental, social, and governmental. You can call it different things. But essentially, we got to see that what we're doing is not adversely affecting our environment or the people that we're trying to work with, whether they be employees or customers or vendors or whomever. So I think that was really a smart way of looking at things holistically. The difficulty came in that there's really not a great way from an accounting standpoint to value those other things besides the monetary aspects. So how do you really measure it? How do you tell if you're passing or failing? And now, though, we're starting to see a lot more enablement, both of the measuring of the success or failure on the plant floor, as well as more accounting measures that are starting to take carbon accounting into effect. So I think it's a totally different day with sustainability.
You know, one of the people, when you mentioned the person you were talking about, they came up with the triple win. You know, one of the other people that's been out there evangelizing for quite some time is Klaus Schwab at the World Economic Forum. I mean, what he's been saying for a while is, he believes we've outgrown capitalism. Like, capitalism could, in effect, create some dead ends for us in terms of inclusive growth, but it could also create some real problems on the planet, in that an organization is best operating when it takes into account all of its stakeholders, to your point, you know, the employees, the customers, the community in which it lives. And unless you're taking care of all those things at once, you're bound to determine to run into problems. So I think that's a big part of the sustainability question as well, is how do we get inclusive involvement? And sometimes that involves public-private partnerships. It involves bringing other sectors into it. So are you dealing with a lot of public sector partners or prospective partners in your work?
Yeah, there's a lot to unpack there. So I think philosophically and economically speaking, one of the problems with, I mean, I think capitalism is still the best system, personal thoughts. I think the short-sighted part of it is the way that publicly traded companies are run, essentially quarter by quarter. And I think if you have to deliver earnings per share reports quarter by quarter, you can have some undue pressure that can counteract some of these more long-term things that are going to be beneficial even for that individual company if only you had patience to see it through. So in our case, Beans Contact, we're privately held. So we kind of have like a 5-10 year strategic planning mindset. So we're not beholden to stockholders, and we don't have to worry about quarterly reports. Playing the long game. So our executive board came up about 2 years ago with what we call the All Electric Society. And that's a vision really to fulfill the UN sustainable, you know, goals, which there's many of them, but they have to do with, like, you know, prosperity for everybody and enough energy for everybody and lots of other stuff like that. So we saw the eventuality of moving to all electric one day as the fulfillment of that. Now, as you referenced before with the EVs, there's a lot of roadblocks. There's a lot of unforeseen, perhaps counterintuitive things that fall out of that, like the increase in carbon production because you're outsourcing battery production to a place that's going to use coal-fired plants to to build the battery packs and stuff like that. So I think it's good that there's some market pressure of customers. There's customer demand for, hey, they're willing to pay a little bit more for a sustainably sourced running shoe than for one that isn't. At least some of the market's willing to do that. So if we can get that kind of market pressure that the company feels it in their traditional profit bottom line, they will act in a way that affects that triple bottom line, in my opinion. And then a lot of people are finding out this is just good business. There's a report on our website, and it's very German Eurocentric, so it's maybe not the best thing for a U.S. audience to look at, but I think the principles still hold. They show that some of the most successful companies in adopting sustainability efforts are also seeing big boosts in traditional measures of economic and financial success. So I think going into it with an open mind, how can we solve this together, is huge. And then the other part of it is more and more companies are making decarbonization pledges, which also include their supply chain. So if you start looking at it holistically as not just what we're producing, but how do we source our energy? How do we source our parts and our pieces from our vendors? Are they acting sustainably? So as these things come in, and if they have staying power, then it should lead us down this path. And the other big thing is the enabler is the digitalization. Now, I was just on a conference call with some folks in our production in the US, in Harrisburg, our main production facilities. And they are putting these things called EM Pros, which is an energy monitor that we make, on a lot of our machines. Again, they're starting at the high value machines or the high energy users. But now they're finding that once they get that energy information from that machine, now they feel like they're flying blind with other machines. So they're applying it to other machines. And anything new that's being built comes from either us if we're building the machine or from the OEM building the machine with energy monitoring already installed. So we just have to hook it up and start using it. So it's kind of it's a mind shift.
It is a mind shift. I think, you know, what's interesting about what you're saying is we're going to have, and to my listening and viewing audience, you're listening to Dave Eifert from Phoenix Contact, who is unpacking the mystery, the international man of mystery in IoT, and he's unpacking this for us in a really interesting way. So I'm enjoying this conversation. It reminds me of an upcoming conversation people will be hearing from when I interview Mujib Ajit from Our Next Energy here in Michigan. He's become an overnight sensation in the world of battery management. And what he's done that's different kind of conforms to what you're saying about we can't let go of capitalism. So a lot of battery companies have come and gone already. They've sunk a lot of capital into it and there's not a market. And suddenly they're bereft of income and they're off the pages. And what Mujib is doing that's different is they're moving into the energy management space first. They're building capacity. They're expanding R&D. They're preparing for the day when EV batteries in cars or in residences or wherever are going to be necessary and needed. But in the meantime, there's a highly profitable and highly successful business model for energy management just off of our current sources of supply. So that's an example of what you're saying about sustainability requires that economic capitalist requirement to be profitable. Otherwise, none of it makes sense.
Kind of the big elephant room with hydrogen production at the moment is everybody sees hydrogen as the one day silver bullet, and maybe in a lot of ways, but it's difficult to produce it economically right now or in a green way. But they're making strides there. And there's this organization called Mission Hydrogen that I sometimes sit on some of their content. And I like the approach. They're very pragmatic and very upfront about the hurdles that the industries face and that they're going to need some government subsidies for the short term, like many nascent industries require in a startup phase to kind of jumpstart it. And also, they're trying to look at where is it appropriate to use, where it's not appropriate to use. And I think that's kind of clear thinking, capitalistic, compatible thinking that you're going to have to actually get it off the ground. But your point about energy reduction is huge. I think if we could ever get to that day where we have but widely abundant energy sources that's renewable, but if we haven't curbed our appetite a little bit, it could create all kinds of unintended bad consequences, like all of a sudden we're lighting up everything and, you know, got light pollution because it's easy to do with LEDs and cheap energy, stuff like that. So I think we need to be more mindful about it. What we look at a series of curves, if you take fossil fuel from its current rate down to zero by 2045 or 2050, and you fill that in with renewables and power to the X, but you still are going to have to reduce a lot just to make that all work. So fortunately, the technologies are here with instrumenting things with IoT to see where your energy is going. And the old Peter Drucker quote, you can't manage what you can't measure. So now we're measuring everything. And so we will be able to manage it and reduce waste. There's a lot of waste that's going on right now.
You know, Dave, this has been a fascinating conversation. Any last thoughts before we wrap for our audience? One of the things I want to do is invite you to come back to Detroit for the ILO summit at the end of May on decarbonization. I think your insights would be really powerful at the table there. So we'll extend an invitation out to you to join us if at all possible, because this conversation is only beginning to take shape. So any last thoughts that you want to share with our listening and viewing audience?
No, I love the work you're doing. DisruptEd, I mean, it's interesting stuff, a lot of interesting speakers. I met you, 3 days ago? And you gave me a great advice for my little talk I was about to give, which is you could say it better than I can. Good enough, hard enough, and darn. What? How's it go again?
That's right. Yes. While you were going on stage, I said, let's get centered here, Dave. Let's have a successful presentation in front of this large audience. You're good, you're strong, and gosh darn it, people like you. And that's just a plagiarized comment from Stuart Smalley on the old SNL. But it applied, Dave.
And I got to tell you, I'm going to bring that back home and back around. And that is, you referenced my LinkedIn profile. It says International Man of Mr. IIoT. And that's a ripoff of another Saturday Night Live alum, Mike Myers from
Austin Powers.
From Austin Powers, yep. So International Man of Mr. So I figured, let me just have fun with it. I think that's one thing that gets lost a lot in people, you know, trying to sound smart and stuff. It's like, hey, we're at the end of the day, if we can't be human and have fun and enjoy it.
Oh my God. Thank you for saying that. That is gold right there. To those of us in the DisruptEd community, that's what we're really looking for. We're listening to people at the end of a workday or on our commute on the way in, and we've got a half hour to entertain, inform, or provoke people. And I think that what our DisruptEd community is saying time and time again is, give us the ordinary humans out there that you encounter that are doing extraordinary things. And as we peeled back the layers with you, Dave, it's really clear that you're doing some really, really important stuff in terms of sustainability and in terms of that ideal world where the energy and the opportunity is available to all, and it becomes a more inclusive world, if nothing else. So thank you so much for your time, and we'll look forward to having you on another episode of DisruptEd. For right now, those of you out there, join our podcast, subscribe to our newsletter, become part of the community, and get DisruptEd with the cool people like Dave out there, because you will not be disappointed listening in on what these people are uncovering and helping us to understand this ginormously disrupted world. So thank you, David, and take care.